You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and this week I am excited to talk to a ministry couple, Pastors Keith and Samantha Jones. They're just going to bring so many good insights today. Some of the things we're going to be covering is calibrate yourself to rural values. We recognize that a rural life is a different way to live, talking about loving people well, talking about the call of God, and even diving into Samantha's story, which is that she is an author and has produced a book about finding God in trauma. And so this whole palette is going to be awesome. I'm excited for you to tune in. But first, I want to say, Pastors Keith, Samantha, how are you guys doing today?
Hey, doing really good. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. It's fun.
Yeah, and thanks for contributing. You know, we really believe that there's a lot to be said by people who are living in these places. You guys hail to us from Cadillac, Michigan, and so I'm excited to dive into that. So let's do what we always do in this podcast. Let's start with your story, and maybe Keith will lead with you, but you guys really find your own dynamic in there. But tell us about your journey in ministry. Where did it start? Where have you been? What's it like right now? Tell us a little bit about your current context. All those things, you know. So kick us off, man.
Yeah, so my journey in ministry is a unique one. So right now I'm in Cadillac, Michigan, a very cool rural town that we love. Absolutely love it. Love being here. But my story starts off with my dad being a pastor of the same church for 35 plus years. And that was in Southern California. So I grew up in the small town of Southern California, which had about 160,000 people in our town, and it
classic.
Was the small one.
Yeah, tiny.
And so I grew up there. I had an understanding of what ministry looked like based on being a PK and going through that. Felt called to ministry at about 8 years old at a weeknight revival. It really felt like God called me to full-time ministry. Was excited for what that would look like. Started getting involved in the youth group and other things. Really started observing and watching my dad at a young age of what it looked like to be in ministry and what that would be like. And then when I got towards end of high school, I was looking at going to Vanguard University, which is in Southern California. And it was one of those schools that's close enough, but not too close to home.
Yeah.
So I could come back, but I was far enough away. Went to school there. And then that's where I met Samantha.
Yeah. So we met there. I grew up in San Diego, California. So that's not a small
absolutely.
Town at all. Enjoyed that and, I was a Baptist kid and, Awana's the whole thing and just had a heart for music and ran into someone that was in Vanguard's music program and went there. I remember it being like, what are these Pentecostals? I don't know anything about them. You know, I grew up with something totally opposite of that in a way. So went there and then Keith and I met, I believe that we met when I was a sophomore or a junior or something. I was looking for the transfer students because, you know, part of the reason you go to college
to meet new people.
To see if you,
MRS
yeah,
degree.
You can meet people.
Yeah, there you go.
What God might have. Yeah, see what God might have. So I, it was exciting. We met and then we decided after getting married that Keith would continue pursuing. I wanted to as well to pursue graduate work at AGTS. So I ended up moving to Springfield. So we went to the homeland.
Yeah, the Assemblies of God, for sure. Yep. Assembly of God Theological Seminary.
Exactly.
Love it.
Yeah. Yep. Assemblies of God Theological Seminary in Mecca, Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah.
And so went there. And one of the reasons that we went there and decided on AGTS was I kind of grew up a poster child of AG. My dad was a pastor, heavily involved, went through Royal Rangers, did all those things, and really felt that it would be a good opportunity to have influence from the inside. So, like, in Pasadena, there's famous seminary there. There's others that I looked at, and just really felt like wanting to be a part of where God had planted me and kind of the tradition that I knew and being a part of that. So we went to Springfield, which was a bit of a culture shock because it was the third largest town in Missouri at about 160,000. And so I still have pictures on my phone of the first time I saw a tractor driving down the road, which
There you
was new
go.
for a SoCal boy. Like that was different. Seeing some of that. And so we started doing schooling. We were both in schooling for a while. Then we went through shortly after being married and doing school for about a year. That's when we started to realize that there is some trauma in our past that we needed to deal with, and some difficulty things, and trying to figure that out. And so we took a step back from doing schooling and just started working. And I worked in the IT department there, just kind of entry level, help desk stuff, and worked there for a few years, especially while Samantha was doing some counseling, and then I started doing some counseling and working on some internal stuff.
Yeah, we took a break from ministry life because even though that was like our calling, when you're dealing with so much internal turmoil, like sometimes it's you need to just take a step back. And so there was a season where we just had to kind of give that over to the Lord, and we didn't know when that would happen again, or if you go through that little bit of that crisis of, am I really called to this? Was this me just working out my needs as a child? To go back to what God, but he had a plan of remaking us and putting us into a new path. And meanwhile, we had been very active in a church in Springfield, a mid-sized church. I was involved with the worship, and Keith started volunteering with their administrative side. And one of the funny things about us is that he was feeling that it was time for his time at Evangel working the IT department to end. And God told me that God was calling him back to
Oh, sure.
ministry and said, don't tell
Oof.
him.
What a hoot.
I was like, wait,
Right.
what? Like,
Yeah.
so I kid you not, he did 48 interviews and got down to like what, four or five? You were the
Yeah,
last
it's really bad when
candidate.
you're the last one, two, or three candidates. And even when you're the last one, you're the
Gosh.
only one, and then it falls through, right? Like, it's like, what?
Wow. So
Yeah,
you were
that
just
one
like, I'm
time.
looking for jobs, looking for jobs, and like just wasn't hitting. She's sitting on this absolute gold mine of information. Gosh.
And I remember thinking that, like, okay, God called me to full-time ministry. Yeah, that's great. So I'll get to that someday when I'm retired. Like when I'm older, I'll go do that kind of thing. For now, I'm just going to make money. And I feel like God had told me at one point, hey, you're going to be leaving, working here at Evangel and AGTS. And so I was like, oh, obviously, I know what that means. That means I'm going to keep doing IT stuff. And then there was a whole process of recognizing that wasn't the trajectory that God had me on. If we started getting involved in heavily involved in the church that we were at. And so when Samantha says a mid-sized church, like that's mid-sized again for Springfield, Missouri, which was and probably mid-sized for California, which is about a 600 person church.
Right.
A lot of you listening might not think of a mid-size as that. And so
Right.
that
I
was
would
just
probably say
kind
my mid-size becomes like 150, 200 if I look at a
of.
mostly rural landscape, you know.
Right. And that's just a perspective shift. And I wanted to point that out. So I was on staff at a church like that in, or I was volunteering and then got on staff at a church like that and worked there for a couple of years. And I really enjoyed it. And after being there about a year and a half, I really felt, well, I did a spiritual retreat and really felt God say, like, okay, it's time to go to your next ministry assignment, and I want you to be a lead pastor. And I was pretty excited about it. I was ready for it. And I remember feeling a sense of urgency behind that call. And so we we started looking. We started obviously using what we had always known, starting with where we, what our presuppositions or preconceived ideas are about what it's supposed to look like. And so we started looking at Iowa and working with the Iowa district. Des Moines, Iowa is one of the places that we were kind of looking at and working with them about church planting. Met all the check boxes that we were looking for, all the things that we wanted. At the time, Travis, our oldest, had just turned one. And we, in January, drove up there for the weekend and spent a weekend driving around, praying through, seeking what to do. And we just felt like we were driving home. And just, I was driving the car. Samantha was in the back with Travis. And I just remember asking her, like, you know, what do you think? And she was like, no. Like, this is a no. And I was like, yeah, I feel a hard
wild
no.
Because you were ready. You were like pumped. You're like, this is, we're jumping into this. And it's like, boom, hard pass.
Yeah. And so then we were looking around and found there was a church in Illinois that was in a suburb that we were looking at. And that kind of fell through. So I was jumping back on the AG Illinois site to see what's going on there. And then I, at the bottom of this, there was this little thing about like out of state or, you know, and there was this little tiny church called Finnville Assembly of God down in there. And I was like, we should look at this.
Sure.
And I remember clicking on that and looking at that church. And I was like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah. So he sent it to me, you know, because when you're praying and you're searching for a new context or you feel like the Spirit moving you, it's just this like dance of like, okay, is this the right thing? Is this worth pursuing? You're constantly, okay, God, which way are you wanting to go? And so I pray as I'm trying to have an open heart and mind. And I had my list, and Rural was definitely not on my list at all. I actually had a number of the population that I wouldn't go under.
And it was higher than 10,000.
Even written. Oh yes, much, much higher. Because, you know, I thought that's not what God had. And I opened it up and they made this cute little like church resume thing. And I remember distinctively, I pulled it up and I was praying like, Lord, open my eyes, Spirit, let me see what you're doing. And God literally said to me, he was like, you're going to this church. And I did not have a godly response. I slammed the computer down. So mad, because I knew that was not where I wanted to go, but I knew that that's what God had for us. You know, it was just one of those, like, you, if you're going to live a life that you're going to follow what God asked you to do, sometimes he's going to ask you to do things that don't make sense to you or aren't what you think you want. And so I think like it was crazy because we applied, and then Keith, what it was like, February or something that.
Yeah. So we applied in late January, had an interview Super Bowl Sunday, online Zoom interview. And then we went out March 1st to candidate. And so we candidated. God just flung open doors. And I still felt the sense of urgency. You got to go. And so we just kind of kept moving forward, and God opened up these doors, and we got there. The house came available. Samantha's work became available remotely. My job came available. Everything lined up within about a 48-hour period.
Dang.
We went back home and found out that COVID hit the United States.
Sure.
And that was March of 2020. And I remember looking back at Samantha and thinking, wow, like, 2020 was not the time to church plant. Like, God had a plan, right? And like, and what was so cool about it, it still blows my mind to this point, is he brought us to a place at a time that was perfect for us.
Nice.
And he began to have a major shift in my life, of a paradigm shift of what ministry looked like. I had always assumed that what I grew up in, what I experienced with my watching my dad experience, what I experienced in California, what I experienced at suburb churches, that was how ministry was done. And
yeah.
And I really began to move into this new phase of kind of what I would consider like an Abraham story.
Sure.
Of God calling us out and saying, I'm taking you to a different place. to different people. I'm asking you to leave your family, your friends, to leave everything and come follow me. And as we did that, as we stepped into to those moments, there's pieces of it that just helped realign and like reestablish what ministry looks like based on the Spirit, based on what God is doing, not based on my preconceived ideas of how ministry works, because it's all about people. And so I started recognizing that we need to love the people who are in front of us. Like that's where God plants us. That's where we got to be. And so we were there for 4 years. During that time, just fantastic things happened for us. I was able to go back and finish my master's degree online, which was really great. And most importantly, we had our daughter, Renee, who's now 3 years old in real time. And so she was born and I was able to be a part of my family in a whole new way that it was different because I was doing ministry the way that God had outlined ministry, not the way that I had set it up.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I'm excited because I heard you start to touch on maybe these different pockets of your story that we're going to dive into. And so now you find yourselves in Cadillac, Michigan. How long have you guys been there?
So we got here in June. So we're still about 6 months in to settling in. So we're still in the honeymoon phase and everything's been great and fantastic.
Yeah, I'll check back with you. We'll do a follow-up episode. I'll be like, all right, 2 years in, how's the wilderness? Like, just, I'm kidding. But I'm excited because what I think we're going to start with here leans into that season of kind of discovering of a new place, new rhythm, new context, small town. I mean, again, Cadillac, I believe, is around 10,000. Yeah. You know, and so you're talking not San Diego, not California, not Springfield. It's just much smaller than all that. And so we'll kick this one over to you, Keith, to start. But talk about that reorienting of values, right? I know that when we spoke on the phone, you mentioned that going too rural, obviously, because it has such a different pace of life, is such a different way of interacting with people, that it almost has to recalibrate your values. And like, so what did that look like for you? Share with us a little bit of that journey.
Yeah, so it was a really transformative process for me. The biggest thing that being in a rural community, so when we first got to Finnville, it was a town of 1,000 people. So, I mean, it was a totally different lifestyle. And just the slowing down that rural communities typically have. And what stood out to me is how the slowing down of most rural communities, by and large, that I've experienced, there's a difference of thoughtfulness prior to action. There's a decision, there's a cultural thought that is made, and then actions follow after that. Whereas in California and some of the suburb areas, it's action first, thoughts later. That tends to be a thing I've witnessed. And so I found that shift was really important for me. And I really began to see the power of a life transformed in front of me, not through programs, because the church that we were at, when we got there, they were probably running a dozen. We were running about 35 when we left. So, you know, like that's really
you see growth. It's exciting. Love that. Yeah.
It's really different than what I experienced, before, but, I'm not experiencing ministry through a program or a discipleship method. I'm experiencing people's transformation by one-on-one encounters, sitting down and having relationship, and then seeing the consistent changes with that. Whereas sometimes in the larger context, you start something and pass it off to someone else, or there's other people who are involved in it. This was a very personal relationship, and it was very people-centered. People-centric, which is what we find in the New Testament, right? Like we find that's how Jesus did it. And he didn't give us a pamphlet on programs. He gave us the Spirit to help us walk with people. And so I really, really liked that. And then another super impactful thing that was good for me, I learned how it's beneficial for the people I'm ministering to. But it was also beneficial in a paradigm shift in my own personal life with how do I work in a way that is sustainable for me and my family, that doesn't take away and distract or minimize the personal relationships. And I have grown up, I grew up in a context where my dad was, even to this day, he would say he worked too much.
He's a busy dude. And that's, a lot of people feel that when there's a high pace environment. Yeah.
Yeah. And he felt that constant grind, that the people that always needed him. And this was a way of like stepping back and recognizing that at the end of the day, Jesus also cares about my soul. He cares about my transformation. He cares about my process. And I had time and capacity for that, and that healing portion, and that inside feeling that I got of being around people who cared about people first was really healthy for me. And my experience has been oftentimes the rural community, well, there's a lot of guys who will act big and tough and carry their guns and, you know, do the hunting thing and be gruff. They're really soft-hearted people. There's a hardness when you first meet some of them and they want to show that. But man, when you start earning a position in their life that you care about them, that soft tenderness really comes out. And then that there's that thoughtful, yes, I want to learn. I want to be a disciple of Jesus. I want to grow. And then the actions start happening. And that's a different paradigm of ministry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really love what you're saying, because I think I think it's any context really, is you're seeing the value of the place you live in and you're leaning into the value of the place you live in. If you were in a different context, urban context, missionary context, somewhere around the world, I think it's important for all of us to discover like what is speaking the language of the people that are around me and how do I do that? And so I applaud your efforts, even as you kind of get to, you know, over the last several years, jump into like this almost really a new way of living in a sense. And so, well, let's dive into some of the practical ramifications of that. And I'll kick this one over to you, Samantha. But we talk about one of the central concepts you mentioned in your discipleship journey, but also just in small town living. It's not infrequent that people use that phrase of, you know, what does it look like to love the people in front of you? You know, and so, Samantha, will you dive into that for us and just kind of walk us through your guys' journey with that phrase?
Yeah, I mean, well, part of it is you have to accept the phrase, like people in front of you are the people that God has called you to love.
That's a huge first step. Yeah.
Like and it's a small enough context that it's not like you're going to grow past the problems. Like you're not going to grow past the individuals. You know, that's a lot of the things you hear on some of the other things about leadership podcasts. Like, well, just grow past those people. It's like, well, no, like the most we're going to grow, I'm still going to know their name and their kids' names and their grandkids' names, because they're one of 30 or one of, you know, 100 or whatever in your context. So I think that's the most important first step for all of it. And I think that for me, like I had to grieve my past experiences of losing like friendships and safety to coming to a new context where people, I had to earn their trust and love. The position of being, you know, the pastor's wife, being in ministry, sometimes it does allow for people to tell you their deepest, darkest secret right away. Sometimes it makes it so that people want to see if they can trust you. Depends on their own past experiences with the ministry couple. I had this lady that was just the sweetest lady ever. First day there, she says, "Hi, my name is blah, blah, blah. I did this, and this. And she's like, "You're still going to love me." And I just said, "Well, I think you're a hoot." So like she is. And she's like, "Oh, okay, good. We're good." And, you know, like, I think that you experience a lot when you're in that moment of people, when they first meet you and you're a pastor, I think that they just really want to know if you're going to love them. And then you go into this phase of like loving people through the long haul of their journey. And being in the spot where you're helping them through that moment that they're of struggle that they're going through, and keep reaching back out to them and love them well, like love them, even if they're maybe responding in ways that are odd or weird, like let them have that moment and keep coming back to loving them. you know, God does love everyone. And I think some of it starts with the humility of God loves
Yeah.
me. So reminding yourself he loves you. So you need to love those people that are in front of you. And I think when there was people that were a little bit more rough around the edges, or maybe have some hurts and pains in their life, that's what I would remember to pray for them about, rather than stewing on what was said or what was done or what I needed to support my husband through because it was his thing he had to go through with the person. You know, just supporting him through his process, as well as loving the other person and saying, well, I see this, I guess, habit in their life or pattern of behavior, and trying to see where maybe the hurt is associated with that. Because I think that a lot of people operate in the church out of their hurts. They're just trying to get their needs met. And you're just the person that has to help them work through that, you know, alongside of them. So I think that that's a big part of it, is just loving people where they're at, loving people on their journey, and praying through those things and seeing if the Spirit wants you to actually say anything to them. Because sometimes the most loving thing you can do is point something out to them in a way that's loving and truthful. And other times it's just praying for them
Sure.
and not saying anything.
Yeah.
So the wisdom is knowing the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, I love that your response kind of covered both this casual view of it, where it's like, hey, just on the surface, it's about coming across people. And even as you make small talk and get to know people, it's like just accepting where they're at and who they are. But even on the deepest of levels, you know, the traumatic, the hurts, the pains, the history. So yeah, what a wonderful breadth of looking at that phrase of loving people in front of you. Thank you so much for tuning into the first part of this awesome conversation with Keith and Samantha Jones. In this first part, we've had a chance to dive into some of their story, talk about kind of the beginnings of how God adjusted them to rural ministry. And so we hope that you walk away, even from this first part of the conversation, very encouraged and equipped and excited to continue serving in rural ministry. One of the things that I love about this podcast is how often we talk about it, but it rings true every time. There's something different when someone understands our story, enters into our world, and helps us see God in all of it. And so from all of us at Rural Advancement this week, we hope you tune into next week for part two of this conversation. For now, I have been your host, Joe Epley. They have been Keith and Samantha Jones, and we will see you next week.